And it is 10 a.m. in the West Coast, and it is 1 p.m. in the East Coast, and it is 8 p.m. in Jerusalem, Israel, the Holy Land. Today is August 17, 2015, and this is Orly Benny Davis, and this is The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to talk about the global situation, as we do every Monday. But today we are going to pray, and we're going to pray hard with all our heart for the people in China, for the people in Bangkok that got bombed just recently, people in Syria that woke up to a disaster this morning, people in the Holy Land, in Israel, and all over where, you know, people just decide to destroy their life, and they are in war zone. The immigrants that are running to their life in from Libya, for Greece, that you know, open our heart and get together all the refugees to arrange them and send them on. The idea is where this is all taking us. Where is it going to be okay to be alive and well, and, you know, to go to work, raise children, and have, you know, a normal life? What's going on with this world of ours? And why we are not getting together to do something about it? You know, many people are, you know, willing to destroy people's work by saying, oh, that was a bad deal. So where have you been when it was a bad deal about, you know, Iran? Well, where have you all been? Stop criticize. Come to play. Last week we had, you know, the flag raising on Cuba, on Havana, the American flag. That's incredible. That's a historical moment. I didn't see people celebrating the way it should. And then, you know, I love their comments when they stated, you know, we really don't want John Kerry, Secretary of State, to lecture us about democracy. Well, doopie-doo, what do you think? America wants lecture about democracy? Where have you been? There was an embargo. And now they are coming and they're saying that there will be some kind of repercussion, that they need compensation for all the work they missed. Yeah, of course. Everything has a repercussion. When you choose one side of the globe, when you choose to be a communist, or you choose to be, I don't know, what kind of a thing that doesn't go with a global understanding. And, you know, in that time, I don't even know, because I have nothing against the people of Cuba. God forbid. I actually think that there is so much to discover. I don't know nothing about them. But the idea is, don't come back fighting. We just raised the flag of the USA there. It means that, you know, what are we going to do with Guantanamo? What's going to happen? We don't know. Question, but take it easy now. Don't punch right in. We want to have, you know, stabilize it, take it easy, and you need some people to do the work. You know, you need to hire good, globally savvy people to start negotiating for you, Cuba. Because you came out punching and it wasn't a smart thing to do, I think, with America, please. You know, if there is something about America, you know, she has a heart of a lion. She does everything. She gives all what she can to everybody, day in, day out. No, there is no question about it. It's the message of the world, you know. You have the right to be happy. You have the right to be free. You have the right to do whatever you can to be the best you can. And she gives you all this tool, and she will use it and give it to you elsewhere. You know, she holds a lot of power, too, in case you try to undermine her, you know, her protected interest. However, I think she acted in a very graceful way all those years that I know her, and I have no And it's not because I'm, I feel like I need to say something good about America. It's the truth. America does good things. So, and she's the leader, and she's still the leader of the free world. Nothing you can do about it. You know, of course, it's a shamble now. But when we say that when you need to recompose and prepare and fix the other, the rest of the world, you do need to do something very important. You just need to know that sometime you have to, you know, break stuff and then re-put them in the new direction. So you'll be okay. Now, we have a few sound bites that I want to let you hear about the situation. Of course, not all cover the last minute issues about, you know, the Bangkok explosion of motorcycle in Thailand, which is near a temple, you know, the most popular with strangers, you know, that came. But God, people have no, there is no mercy sometimes on people. You know, we need the grace of God for this, seriously. Let's listen to the first segment and we'll talk about that.
Most of Cuba still looks like it's frozen in time. Time when most of what you see here was owned by American companies. From the former Sears department store to the grand hotels once run by the American mafia. U.S. firms and American citizens whose property was confiscated after the revolution are demanding up to $7 billion in compensation. But not to be outdone, the Cuban government is claiming damages too, to the tune of $100 billion. That's what it says 54 years of U.S. economic sanctions has cost the country.
For example, if you have a refinery with U.S. machinery that was paralyzed because we could not buy spare parts, Cuba calculates the losses based on the embargo. There's the prohibition to trade in U.S. dollars, which jacks up prices of everything. All of this adds up.
Cuba is also claiming assets frozen in U.S. banks after the revolution, plus interest. And it blames the U.S. embargo for its dilapidated infrastructure. But while Cuban insiders concede $100 billion is an inflated figure, they say it's a starting point for a negotiated settlement, which for Cuba begins with the lifting of the U.S. economic embargo.
So Cuba can argue very legally, if the sanctions are not lifted, there's no way that we can sit down and negotiate this. And when we negotiate, we are going to give you a bill of what yours.
The standoff on who owes what to whom and how much it's worth is not only complicated, it's essential to normalizing bilateral relations. The 1996 Helms-Burton Act, passed by the U.S. Congress, specifically states that all property claims must be satisfactorily resolved before the U.S. economic embargo against Cuba can be lifted.
But Cuba believes it has another card up its sleeve to ultimately negotiate a deal in which both sides agree to call it even.
They'll have to accept. Otherwise, there isn't going to be any deal. And of course, the price is investment in Cuba.
With diplomatic ties renewed, many American companies that were expropriated are eager to return to the Caribbean's largest island. But the message seems to be that they'll first have to drop their claims or stay out. Lucia Newman, Al Jazeera, Havana.
That was very nice. Very nice. Great piece, I think, from Al Jazeera, which represents what really, you know, both sides claim that they, you know, they owe each other money. Let's call it even. And let's talk about investment in Cuba. And if it's the island, the biggest island in the Caribbean, it means that you have a tourism and you have a shore. Offshore, you have beaches that you need to work. Look at those buildings that they have there. And you know that we can make some kind of a real real zone of romantic zone. It can be. I know they use a lot of hard colors, but from my history in Rome, I can say that when you redo, when you touch a building, which the Italians do incredibly well, you know, they take those buildings and make them look fantastic. And you have such a beautiful, beautiful terrace, and you have such a great building with balconies. I would say that people should go and look at the real estate there. Make them great hotels, great promenade, and start moving. Please, let's not stop about, you know, who is right, who is wrong. It's over. It's passé. Cuba, welcome to the Western world. We're happy that you're a part of us, and we love you guys. You know, all those, there are some Cuban from all sorts. You know, everyone has, you know, family in America, elsewhere. So I think it will be nice. I would love to see Cuba developed well, and it takes some heart, you know, and do the right thing and get some people to work. I'm sure that there is a lot of Hispanic friends that will come and help. So let's hope for the best for Cuba. That's not easy. That's what they had to go through. My goodness, that was so much. I don't know. I think that they fight forever. Anyway, so welcome to the club, Cuba. So happy for you. And I'm happy for America that raised the flag. Very proud, you know. Anyway, let's go back to some music, and we'll be back after that.
She's fine, but when she leaves, I'm not so sure. It's always the same. She's playing her game.
And this is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. It's BBS Radio, as you know. Guys, this public radio is really one of the things that I love the most, because she does what everybody needs to do is fair news, fair music. You listen, and you have access all the time to us. You can call in, you can talk to us, you can send us mail, whatever. It takes us, all of us together, to change the world, and we need every one of you. And it's really nice that we're all sitting nice and sweet, but we need to move this world to the next level, and we need the flip of faith that we really gonna give each other some love, some caring, okay? So now I want to listen to the next thing that we had, you know, we heard about the chemical explosion in China, so let's listen to this.
Among the many firefighters who've died, Yong Hai, seen here with his sister, was the youngest. Just 17. In fact, many of them are very young, like this exhausted group resting close to the epicenter. An unknown number of firefighters is still missing, but were they trained for a chemical disaster on this scale? Military chemical experts have now been deployed to an area that remains highly combustible. On Friday morning, the fires were still burning, with many people worried about whether it's safe to breathe the air in a city without a face.
It's an explosion from a chemical plant, after all. There must be hazardous stuff in the air. It won't be good for our bodies.
But her friend is not worried.
Since the government said the air quality is okay, we should feel safe about it. We should trust the government.
The clock shows the hour and minute of the second more powerful explosion, 11:38. Below is a bus depot. Imagine the death toll if the blasts had happened just a few hours earlier. At a news conference given by local government officials, none was able to give a categorical answer to that one question on everyone's mind right now.
Sir, just one simple question. Is the air safe to breathe or not?
I think the air quality is supposed to be safe to ordinary people.
Not the most reassuring reply. It's still not clear what caused the multiple explosions in a warehouse owned by a local logistics company. Local officials now confirm that up to 50,000 tons of dangerous chemicals, including cyanide, were stored in that warehouse every year. Apartment blocks overlooking the industrial zone were damaged. The shattered windows can be repaired, but for now the occupants of these homes are living in tents, unsure when they can return.
There was a pungent smell in the air and we couldn't breathe. We rushed downstairs and started to vomit. We had our stomachs inside out.
Tianjin is now the focus of a national debate about how China's government is handling the country's latest man-made disaster. The leadership will be worried if the anxiety and despair among some survivors turns to anger.
This disaster has raised renewed questions about safety standards in China's chemical industry, where there have now been a total of 15 explosions in plants this year alone. Adrian Brown, Al Jazeera in Tianjin.
And Adrian Brown really taking it to a different level when he filmed the explosion where it took place, and there is a lot of chemical residue there, and of course they are afraid from the rain, because once the rain hits, for some reason they say it's going to intrigue some kind of continuation of the cyanide, and it can be really dangerous to whoever is around there. So we have a very big on-end situation in China, and I'm not sure who is going and who is helping, and if the world is, reaching out to help, I'm sure that there will be a lot of people on the move to help at this point. The idea of there is a chemical explosion needs to be taken very seriously, and the professional needs to be sent there. It's not easy. It's really, really, really scary for the people who live there. And as you can imagine, it's not safe for them. And we don't know how many people perish, and we don't know what the end of the game will be. And you cannot put water on fire with a chemical weapon, because that's where the spreads more, so the lead is burn through. And if they're talking about 50 tons a year, I don't know. God bless them. All right, guys, let's go to the next issue that we have an end. As usual, we are talking about the global thing on Monday. We have news, and of course, there are so many people that want to alert you. I just pay attention to things that I really care, and I think that it's important for you to know. So let's listen to this.
Mr. Scott Perry of Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, gentlemen. We certainly appreciate your indulgence. We know it's been a long time. In the context of these statements is I'd like to ask my questions. From 1994, so not too long ago, right? 11, we're talking about 11, 15-year context of this deal for the most strict portions of it. So from 1994, the entire world will be safer as we slow the spread of nuclear weapons is one statement, and also the United States and international inspectors will carefully monitor North Korea to make sure it keeps its commitments. And we all know that's, of course, quotes from President Clinton, that none of that happened. I mean, North Korea is what it is, and we are where we are. Within that context, Secretary Kerry, reading your quote recently with a reporter from Al Arabiya, I don't know how to interpret at this point in time, except to take it at face value, in relation to chance of death to America, death to Israel, we're going to continue our policy. And then it's very troubling, it's very disturbing, it's very troubling, and we'll have to wait and see. What will we have to wait and see, Secretary Kerry? And before you answer, 1979, 52 U.S. hostages, 444 days. 1983, the U.S. Marine barracks, 241 Americans killed. 1992, the Israeli embassy in Argentina bombed. 2011, the attempted assassination of the Saudi ambassador in D.C. The killings and maimings of hundreds in Iraq and Afghanistan, not to mention support of the Saad, Hezbollah, Hamas, and activities in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. What will we have to wait and see?
To see the implementation of the plan, Congressman. No, you and I can have a speech off if you want.
I don't want to have a speech off. I want to understand your comments.
We could have a competition for who is angrier about some of the things Iran has done historically. We understand they've killed Americans. We understand what they did in Khobar Towers. We understand all of this. But they were marching towards a nuclear
Mr.
weapon.
Mr. Secretary, you must understand, I appreciate this, Congressman, the American people see Iran as like a crocodile or a shark that does what it does. And we're saying, well, we're going to give the crocodile or the shark a few more teeth, and let's see if it does something different.
That's just not accurate. That's not accurate, but that's what we say.
Let me say this, too. You have said that we don't have a better option. Keep on saying, well, you haven't provided a better option.
Congressman,
First of all, Mr. Secretary, with all due respect, it is not Congress's job. This is the administration. And if you would use the treaty process as provided by the Constitution, maybe we wouldn't be in this situation. Furthermore, you know, you say, well, this is the only deal we can get. There's no better deal. Congress has a long history of instituting better deals. Example are 200 treaties, including 80 multilateral accords modified by Congress, including the Arms and Control Agreement, SALT II, and the Threshold Test Ban Treaty that failed to reach a vote and were modified. So there is a history for that of getting a better deal. And if the Ayatollah doesn't like it and doesn't want to negotiate it, oh, boo-hoo. We're here for America. We stand for America. You represent America. With that having been said, you know, in another interview, if you don't get a majority in Congress to support this deal, doesn't that undermine the deal? And your statement, it's abbreviated, they don't care over there. And I'm assuming you mean Iraq, as long as the deal is implemented. And that's what we care about, that this deal being implemented. So do you care more about this deal or the UN's approval or American sovereignty and the approval of the American people through their duly elected representatives, Mr. Secretary?
Congressman, I don't need any lessons from you about who I represent. I've represented and fought for our country since I was out of college.
And God bless you for your service.
Don't give me any lessons about that, okay? Now, let me just make it crystal clear to you. This is America's interest, because America is the principal guarantor of security in the region, and particularly with respect to some of our closest friends. Now, we believe that Iran was marching towards a weapon or the capacity to have a weapon, and we've rolled that back, Congress.
Okay, that's your opinion.
That's indisputable.
No, let me ask you this. Mr. Secretary.
That's a fact.
Is it possible that Iran will acquire Russian air defense missiles in relation to the arms embargo lifting to protect nuclear sites? Possible or not possible?
Say that again.
Is it possible that Iran will acquire Russian air defense missiles to protect nuclear sites?
Those are not in the agreement. They have A-300s.
In the relation to the arms embargo lifting?
No, they're not banned by the arms embargo. They're outside of it.
We're going to Mr. Brandon Boyle of Pennsylvania.
All right, and we are back, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. That was Secretary John Kerry, which had to really be straightforward about the deal in Iran. And I know that there are so many people that are condemning the deal. And for some reason, people think that no deal is the better deal. I believe in progress. I believe in people that come along and talk about issues. I believe that we can change the world. I am a believer, true believer, in people who could make the difference. I believe that every one of you is important, and anybody who tells you differently, just boo-ha them, because I know how the difference you know, what makes one man in the center of, you know, China Square, what he did to the world. I believe that, you know, nothing aggressive and nothing so scary like that. But, you know, John Kerry did all his best, and he's doing all his best. He's keep on doing. And the truth, they are losing the argument, because the argument doesn't hold water. It doesn't hold water from one reason. If they were complaining that Iran is about to have a nuclear weapon and now we stop them for another 10 years, it's a success. Why should we think that it's not a success? So it is a success at that point. Now they're going to cheat and they're going to do everything. Of course, everything can be happening. Now the Iranian on their side said, oh, you want to penetrate Iran now and make it what it is, and they are already lost it because they opened the door. It's over for them too. The world cannot be stagnant in one point. If there is anything you know about their life, is that there is change. You cannot stop change. It's happening. So you better embrace it and you better be a part of it. If not, it's going to change you. So what part of the Iranian regime wants to, you know, obscure all? The people are already free. They go to the university. They do things that there are time in history where they were, you know, part of the Western world, and they were best friends with America and Israel. And I don't understand why there should be always one side of the game. We can go back to what it is. You know, they fought, and for some reason, something went wrong. Whatever it was, I hope they cleared it up. Because if they talked for 2 years and they didn't clear it out, that's sad. The only thing about the Iranian that we need to emphasize at this point and forward, that she's holding many, many people. And the fact that many complain that we have only, you know, three Americans that are there, it's not true. It's not true. From the war in Iraq, we realized that how many Iranian, you know, how many Iraqi prisoners were there in Iran for 20 years almost. There were succession of some releases that, you know, that gave us the clue about the regime. Now, it's about time to open those doors and let people go. You can hold them, you know, as much as you wish if you want them to, you know, to shut their life off. But we cannot say anything when the regime is acting in a weird way. It will be an excuse to what? We're not going to want to start any argument. We want to see some goodwill gesture from them. They need to come, not the copy that they came out like after the end of the deal. Oh, we're going to still destroy whatever, and we still destroy it, and we still... Hey, why you guys are doing it? It's not the way to talk to the West. It's not the way to proceed. And definitely Israel kept her, you know, her cards close, and they say they're going to do whatever they have to do in order to keep Israel safe. But it's not about keeping only Israel safe. This is Israel is the Holy Land. And every time, you know, people are saying weird stuff, like let me open a parenthesis here and give you some the news about our ambassador, the Israel ambassador to Rome. She's Italian, ex-parliament member of the Italian government, and now she represents Israel as the ambassador. And everybody say, oh, what about dual loyalty? What's wrong with you guys? This is the Holy Land. The Holy Land is the God-given land for the universe to be closer to Him. Whoever helps the Holy Land helps to be in the light, to bring the light to the world. So for her to do that, she's actually keeping more light, bringing more light to the that side of Europe that is very needed, because she will have the most incredible, update the high-tech innovation, the most advanced technology. She could actually help Europe, as I say. You know, Italy is going to be the engine for the next development in Europe. Because once you get a connection to the innovation of the world, you start growing. So we stop, in airplane, and I'm closing that parenthesis, in airplane there is one issue that you have to do. In order for you to fly, and John Kerry, when we spoke about flying once, I was about my 7-hour to flight, and I needed to stall, to make the plane stall in order for you to progress, so you have the capability to take control back there, the plane. And John Kerry explained to me how to stall. It was amazing. We were like in the Four Seasons Hotel in the conference, and he was talking about flying, which I adore. And John Kerry explains to us, I came to him and said, I need to stall. What should I do? And he started directing me, telling me how to do it and pointing his fingers, that's how you do. So he was such a kind. Of course, that's why I respect him a lot, because the moment you come out of the blue and you talk to him about it, and he's such a friendly person, and people who know him understand what a kind of a charisma he has. We can say that he is a good messenger for the world at this point in time, and he's all the chip. So I really reinforcing his candidacy. I really would love him to run. No question asked about it. I really want him to run. Now let's keep on doing. So once you start flying. There is something about the plane. The plane has, the brakes are in the pedals, and you have to taxi with the plane, and the plane needs to keep the nose straight, and you have to taxi. You taxi between the right feet and the left feet, and you keep yourself balanced. And then at a certain point, when you start the full speed ahead, when you get all the speed all the way on, you have to start, running on the runway, and then it's going to take off. But it's going to take off if you lift your feet from the brakes, because you are pedaling and you're keeping the nose straight, but your feet are on the ground holding the brakes. Once you want to have a lift off, you need to raise your feet from the brake and let it fly. So you guys all understand it, metaphorically speaking, that we need to loosen up a little in order to fly. We need to stop being control freak of everything, because as you know, China, look what happened. You can't control everything. As you know, those people are crazy that they want to explode. But we need to be a brother to each other. We need to understand that humanity in this time and frame, she's united in one. And we need to start watching out for each other. First of all, the children, most important children, you have to watch for them. Doesn't matter if they're yours or others. We are the people of the world. We need to establish some kind of understanding that we are for each other. Of course, hey, you do business, you start here, everybody knows that. But as long as we are in the free, in the free zone of shopping, running around, keep your eyes open. Stop going around like there is, hallelujah and kumbaya everywhere. Just watch it. Watch it. There are people, this morning I was running, I was driving, and there was a truck, that was running ragged. I started honking. I said, hey, lose it. Relax. Because it's endangering the public. In America, it's really, public ordinance is really, really common, so they know it. But in the rest of the world, it's not. Let's start having it, okay? And I really, really, really would love to have some comments from you guys all. You know, email me, write to me, okay? Because I know that I'm speaking to me, and my dog is listening, obviously. But I need you to, I need to know that I'm making somebody think, maybe. Doesn't matter. You don't need to be convinced at all, but you need to be there for us, okay? So let's listen to some more music, and then we'll have another piece of history in the making.
What's up there, Sheila? Let me sing to you, baby. And I love you so. The people ask me how I've lived till now.
And we are back. That was Elvis Presley. Yes, the king. It was so good to have him in our music, and God bless his soul. He's gone, but I know that there are others that are good, but, you know, those famous and important ones are still. And by the way, Bon Jovi is coming to Israel in October, I think. And we have Mariah Carey is coming for a show tomorrow in near my city. It's going to be incredible. Then we have a lot of famous people that come and going, because, you know, coming to the Holy Land is not funny. Jerusalem is the Holy Land for every, is the holy city for everybody. And I really, when I say I want to see the flag of America rising there, it's not in the consulate in East Jerusalem that actually provides service to Israeli and Palestinian, whatever they call it, because the Israeli are Palestinian to be, by, you know, from the territory. So it's really ridiculous. They need to look what's really going on there, because that's up to me. But I think we need to make sense. And when we make sense, everything is clear. Confusion, you know, don't take the confusion from the United Nations. They still don't have, after all these years, they don't have their act together. They don't even have a clue what's going on in the world. They just make resolution. And if you guys come again, another resolution from Israel, against Israel, I'm telling you that Israel should just abort everything as well as leave it, because it don't make any sense. You know, you need to start making sense at some point or another. Like, what progress did you make? What conference this year are going to be around the world from the United Nations? Because if I was the United Nations, let's assume that I would, which I could easily, let's assume I would make a conference every month in every different side, you know, in different place in the globe, create some kind of talking, development. You know, Europe needs help. China needs help, of course, because she's a developing country. Africa, of course, needs help. Australia never played the game. I don't know where they are doing, but they're doing fine, and they're incredible. Then you go to Canada, you can create some kind of, you know, this. We have still the fishing thing. If you have a dispute over fish, you know, a fisherman on salmon, you know, with Canada, would you say that it's not resolved? That's so bothersome. You know, nobody's doing anything. You need to start creating some energy to fulfill the end of the day's vision that I will get along. Because if you don't have that vision, it means that we're all going to fight. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to be standing for that. So, in that note, let's listen to the next one that I have, the soundbite of the news, okay?
Your letter says there is no better option to prevent an Iranian nuclear weapon than through diplomacy. But critics say the U.S. could have gotten a better deal. What do you say to that?
Steph, I just don't know how. When you spend years negotiating this deal and you finally compromise and come to one that's somewhat satisfactory to both sides, now it's going to fall apart if it's not ratified by Congress. And as a consequence, the sanctions fall apart and you get a much worse situation than we had beforehand.
However, the deal lifts the embargo on Iran importing and exporting conventional weapons and ballistic missiles, as you know, after several years. Was that too great of a concession for the U.S. to make?
No, absolutely not. This was focused on the nuclear weapons. There are some side deals on that from the ballistic weapons side of the house. But ultimately, the aim was to not let Iran get a nuclear weapon. And that's what this does, at least for 10 to 15 years, and I think even much farther beyond. So that, quite frankly, is a very small concession.
And yet Russia and China will be able to sell Iran weapons, and the head of the Revolutionary Guard, Soleimani, was in Moscow at the end of July. Is it in the U.S.'s larger strategic interest in the region to have given in on that point?
Well, absolutely. I look at it this way. If we don't ratify it, then Russia and China are going to sell them anything they want to start with. So we're much worse off without the agreement than we are with one. So you're going to have some compromise on both sides. And we've got that. And it's a very strict sanctions regime that we've had in place that will get lifted. And in addition to that, we've got a very strict inspection regime there as well. So once it does not get ratified, then our inspections won't be there.
The letter that dozens of generals and admirals, including yourself, have signed on to and sent to President Obama, you sort of have a unique perspective on all of this. Why did you decide to, at this time, deliver this letter to the president?
Well, oftentimes people think, well, we'll just solve this with a military solution. And those of us who have served recognize that, one, it's a very messy military solution, and I really personally don't think there is a military solution. You might be able to have a strike, but then you're going to end up with a mess that's just incredible in the Middle East, much worse than it is today when you've got what's going on in Iran and Syria. Is that ultimately what we want? And those of us who have been there and seen it and done that sit there and go, hey, sure, you can use a military option in the end analysis, but it really is not the right way to go. If we can solve this with some form of diplomacy, then that is the way we ought to be going.
From men that have been in war, retired Brigadier General Stephen Cheney. Thank you for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
All right. Oh, my God. I used this TV station today like crazy. Jazeera, hey, you guys are doing good if I follow some of them. But, we need to understand that when you start doing news, you do it right. It doesn't matter what side of the game you are, because at the end, news supposed to reflect what it is. Those generals signed the letter. More than 36 generals signed the letter to support the deal, the Iranian deal. It's just you don't want to have another mess on your end, which is true. So that's about it as far as the deal goes. And I think that what we need to do is keep on going and stop looking backwards and pray and hope. Now, we still need to move the embassy to Jerusalem. Nothing you guys can do will change my thought about it. And there is no reason in the world that the world will not trust the holy places with Israel, because actually she's more cordial to the rest of the religion, because the Jewish people have a hard time praying on Temple Mount. So why don't we start thinking about the day after all this mess is done, and when we're going to pray together and have a world that we can leave to our children, because we need technology and we need a new, many, many new pilots. If you guys know how much pilots get paid these days, you will be baffled, because they are paid nothing. It's low income kind of payment. They think that they have a very, very prestigious job with the low income, which is really an assault to the profession. And since we are all traveling, and since we all going abroad, and since we want to have the best pilots flying, and not like to the news in Indonesia that another flight went down with a large stack of you know, people vanish, but they had also a lot of money on board. For some reason, that's what the news was telling. More than $500,000 there. Or it's nice to say, you know, it was on the flight. It's really cute. You know, now it's gone. The idea is really, seriously, that we need to get more pilots. We need to have more training of pilots, and we need to have real good payment for them. And it's if it's going to cost more to the airliner, so be it. But those people in the air needs to be safe. And as we build airplanes that are safer and stronger, we want to know that the people who fly them are normal first. You know, not the crazy hoots like we had that launched the airplane to the ground, and safe, that they won't go, you know, and take off when it's a fog and everything, risking so many people. And that's it, you know. Let's get this pilot's payment up. We need the, I know that they don't have a lobbyist on the Hill, and they don't have lobbyists anywhere in the world, because they are pilots, of course, what they don't think about. They love to fly, so they don't think. But at the end of the day, we're all paying the price if something goes wrong, because you don't know who's up in the air and who's going to get it. So, guys, time to get some real pilots schooling. I know that in Florida there is one that is great. I suggested to South Carolina, you know, center to build one, because it's really a nice spot to fly on top. You know, you can't believe South Carolina, how it looks from the top. And the sun, wow, it's amazing. So, let's get some music, and of course, flying is my hobby, so please don't pay attention to me on this one. But, you know, one day. Anyway, let's get some music going, and we'll salute you after that. And before I let you go for today, for Monday show, I just want to know to let you know that airline pilots do receive more than normal, $114,000 a year. So it sounds good, but I'm worried about nuclear power reactor operator, that they gain only $74,000. So it's really, really bad. And detective, $74,000, which is really low. Power distributor and dispatcher, $71,000. Fashion designer, you know, the who's and who's and who's. No, $62,000, no good. Subway and street car operator, they get the same price as a fashion designer. This is hilarious. Guys, it's been a pleasure. I love you. It was a great Monday show. I'll talk to you on Wednesday. It will be earlier. It will be 5 p.m. In Jerusalem, of course. So let's calculate it. No, on Wednesday, it's actually 1 hour earlier. It's 7 p.m. here, but it will be 9 a.m. in the West Coast. So not bad. On Wednesday, we're going to talk about Europe and what Angela Merkel was saying today. So God bless you all. I love you. Take care. Be well, and talk to you on Wednesday. Ciao, ciao.